Hello, everyone. Nice to see you all here. And what you just watched, what we just saw, is, for those of you who may not know, is called an arati. And the chanting of mantras and the waving of lights is a ceremony to invoke the blessings of the gurus of this tradition. And their blessing has the power to awaken us to our divine potential. And this program we call satsang, which is a coming together of fellow devotees to sit in the company of the truth and a great being, our own, very own great being, Swamiji. So a special welcome if you're here for the first time. And in satsang, we have an opportunity to say, meet Guruji and myself, hello. We'll hear a talk by Guruji and meditate together. And we share a common goal when we come together like this. We share a goal to experience the inner self, the deepest part of ourselves, to hear the teaching, to contemplate the highest teaching, and to be in the presence of the guru's energy, the guru's shakti. And satsang is a unique experience. For a few hours, we can put aside the concerns we have about our ordinary life, our worries, our sadness, our frustration that we often feel as we go about our days. And we may bring that to satsang, those feelings. We may be carrying them, but here, there's an opportunity to contact a deep place within us and to put them aside for a while. Don't worry, they'll come back. There are always obstacles in life, but in satsang, we learn how to overcome them. We learn what to do about them. We learn how to think about them in a way that makes it easier to handle. So just a reminder to please turn off your mobile phones. They've been going off recently in satsang, so you don't want to be that person that I get PO'd at. So please check. So tonight is a special night. We are commemorating the Maha Samadhi, or the death of Baba Muktananda, Swamiji's guru. He actually died on October 2nd. Oh my God, I'm gonna cry. Sorry. '82. Don't look at me. And it is our custom to remember and honor him on this day, such a great being. And he was one of the greatest gurus of the last century. There's no doubt about it. He was mysterious, enigmatic, powerful, loving, compassionate, intelligent, and magical. I saw him as magical anyway. And he had a way with Westerners, which is not an ordinary characteristic of an Indian, excuse my cultural gaffe here, but it's not ordinary. He wasn't an ordinary man by any sense of the word. And he was able to dissolve, even though he spoke very little English, and he always spoke through a translator, he dissolved that barrier of language to communicate in a way that was almost telepathic. And he swooped around the world, gathering devotees from all walks of life, and gave Shaktipat to thousands of seekers. And he was a master of the Shakti. He also captured the mind and heart of our Guruji. No easy thing. And I treasured every encounter with him, whether he was pleased with me or displeased with me. And it seemed like he was always more displeased with me than he was pleased with me. In fact, his displeasure has remained etched in my mind as his greatest teaching to me. So, of course, every year when October appears, I remember the day he left his body and his last words to me. So I thought I would share that story with you. It was one of my most defiant moments in my spiritual journey, I have to say, and perhaps one of my most embarrassing. But here goes. I need a tissue. And a drink of water. I knew something weird was going to happen tonight. I've had the strangest day. I've been clumsy all day. Thanks. Thank you. So I might spill this all over myself. All right, so I had been living and working in the USA, and I was living at this time, just before Baba went back to India on his last tour, I was still doing the Siddhapath magazine, which is a magazine for his devotees all over the world. And I was going to go back on tour to India with him to continue that work. And Swamiji was in Australia at that time. Were you still in Australia? Okay. He was running the Gore Street Ashram. And so I got back to India, and I was beginning to feel like at a bit of a loss. My husband had just taken sannyas, and I was supposed to take it, but Baba hadn't mentioned it to me. And so I thought, well, you know, what am I doing? And I started to get, you know, restless, which is my want sometimes. Not so much anymore, but back then for sure. And Swamiji came to India after we all arrived there, and I met him, and it was great to see him. I hadn't seen him for a long time. But then I saw all the Australian devotees, okay? And I got really upset and jealous. And I got mad. I started to get really mad. And I started bitching about him in my mind. Okay, he's this, he's that. I won't tell you what I thought. You don't really want to hear it anyway. But anyways, you know, the green-eyed monster. And there was a man, I was working in the courtyard as well as working on the magazine. In Baba's courtyard, I would just sit there while he gave darshan, and if he needed me to do something, I would do it. And there was a man who used to work over there on the other side, and he started pursuing me. Ah, yes, vengeance. What? I know. At the time, I told him something different. Okay, he doesn't believe that this is the real story. But let me just tell you, this is the real story. Okay? What? Should I continue or stop now? No. What?
You.
This is going to take forever. Oh. All right. So anyways, where am I? Oh yeah, he started pursuing me. And I was like, you know, not really interested, really. I mean, only, you know, because I got a little interested because I was having a tantrum. But as time went by, my tantrum grew. Okay. And so, okay. Okay, I thought, I'll try it on, see if it works. thought, yeah, it'd be good, you know, to, he was going back to America. He'd been in Ganesh Puri for about 7 years or something, in the working in the gardens. And he was actually a disciple of Nisargadatta, and he was actually staying in the ashram. But anyway, that's a whole other story. But that's really why we didn't click. Two radically opposed, diametrically opposed attitudes towards life. So anyway, I thought, okay, I'll give it a whirl. So, I'll explore it. So all these guys who worked in the garden lived in a really beautiful house up on the hill behind the ashram. It was still on the ashram ground. So I used to walk back and forth to visit them, and we'd hang out and stuff. And apparently Baba got wind of what I was doing. Okay, this is how really rebellious I had become. So one afternoon, one of his main managers, Venkapa, came over to me and said, Baba wants to see you. And Venkapa actually was kind of managing these guys, the garden guys. So he took me into Baba's room, and I sat down on the floor. Baba says to me, you're seeing that boy. I said, yes, Baba, through a translator. But I said, yes, Baba. He said, he's a very bad man. I said, now, as if that wasn't enough to give me pause, okay? But oh no, when I set my mind to something, and as Baba was speaking to me, I was getting more and more determined not to listen to him, okay? So he said, he's a very bad man. He slept with all the girls in the ashram. But he told me. I said, really? I said, Baba, can you get me a list? I knew it wasn't true. I knew he was trying to stop me, you know, from what I was doing, that I was probably making a big mistake. But did it stop me? Oh, no. No, not me. So I leave Baba's room, and I'm waiting for the list, which I know will never come. So Narayan was his name. And he decided that he wanted to go back to America. And this was in April and May. Baba, as I said, passed away in October. And this was in April of May. And so he wanted to leave on May 15th, which was around May 15th, which was the inauguration of his two successors, which was a whole other drama going on in the ashram at the time. And so I decided I would go with him. And on the day that we were supposed to leave, we went up to Baba to say goodbye. And Baba looked at me and said, you've got one of my best yogis. I said, oh, Baba. And he said, your mind is weak. One minute you want sannyas, and the next you want to get married. I didn't want to get married, but that's what Baba said. I said, yes, Baba. I wasn't up for disagreeing with Baba. And then he looked at me, and he said, you won't be happy. Now, these final words came in a whole series of teachings that Baba had given me about learning to love universally and not specifically. And that was the final one that he transmitted to me. And of course, the minute we walked outside the ashram doors, I knew it was a mistake. I knew that I was being just willful and stupid and angry. And so, of course, when we got back to Canada, which is where we were going, you know, I stayed and he went on to America. But that teaching was something that comes to my mind every time I felt like I want to quit this work. And there have been moments, because in sadhana you do go through, I've gone through moments of self-doubt. And, you know, thinking about my life from a certain point of view, not recently, not for many, many years, but when I did, his last words to me were, "You won't be happy," which was an anchor, which became an anchor for me to persevere until I felt complete in what I was supposed to do and how I was supposed to live my life and make a commitment to the work with Swamiji in such a way that nothing could shake that. And so I am eternally grateful to him for that teaching. And in one of Baba's last talks, he gave us some, you could call them aphorisms, I guess, on how to live life after he was gone. So I'll just read a few. He says these in the first person. He says, "I take refuge in satsang, in the community of siddhas. I will not give up my contemplation of myself. I will not forget my own mantra. And I will see everything as Shiva." So this is his recommendation for us to live our lives from a spiritual point of view, from the point of view of the self. Thank you. Okay. I think now we chant, don't we?
Welcome, everyone. Now I'm going to tell you the real story. No. I want to welcome everybody to tonight. It's, well, it's 36 years since probably the saddest day of my life. 36 years. Just as a curiosity, how many people, I know there are a few of you, actually met Baba in the flesh, I'm talking about? One, two, three, four. About seven or eight of us? Me too, I met him. I've often said that one of my strangest and deepest desires, I can introduce all of you to him, bring you up, meet him. I have it all in my mind how it would play out. But it'll have to be on another plane of consciousness. Okay? As close as we can get is tonight, because I've picked some very beautiful Baba texts to look at. But first of all, the way I remember Baba in every talk is by saying what he said at the beginning of every talk in Hindi, "Sabko bade sanmane ke saath prem se ritik swagat." With great respect and love, I welcome you all with all my heart. And in some sense, that encapsulated his essential teaching, to welcome another person with love. To love yourself, to know yourself, to welcome another person with love. So in that spirit, I want to welcome you all. So, yeah, I was in Gore Street. I was running the Gore Street Ashram. Some of you know there's an ashram in Gore Street? No. And we were in the middle, that weekend, we're in the middle of an intensive. And it was a two-day intensive, and it was early Sunday morning, second day of the intensive, and I was working on my talk for that morning, and the phone rang, and I better not tell this story, actually. But And the next day, a bunch of us were on a plane to India. Got there for Baba's burial. And, you know, the death of a great being like that is very special, very painful, but it also is something that transcends sorrow. You know, we grieve for the person, and yet what Baba represented was so much more. As a person, he was absolutely aghast. He was so charming, so interesting, so entertaining, so loving, and so brilliant. But what he carried was such a great spiritual power, such a great shakti, and he spread that all over the world. I never met anyone remotely in his league, and I think his work is still going on and still growing, and the shakti that we experience here is all his grace. And that's why I always say his beginning, because I always want to invoke him, because to me, Baba is one with, synonymous with the shakti. Even to think about Baba, I'm telling you now my direct experience, all I have to do is think about Baba and I feel connected to that shakti. And just think about him and we connect. So tonight we're thinking about him intensely. So I thought I'd do something special, which I do on sort of special days. And that is I go to my stash of direct transcripts. I have a thick folder of transcriptions of Baba's direct talks. And for some reason, they're unedited. You know, they're unedited. They're not pretty warm. Are we very warm? We are. I'm warm, too. What do you think we should do? Open the door? But then people over there will freeze. Yeah, I'm feeling, is the heater on? Is the heater on? No?
I don't think we should leave it open.
A few minutes. You gonna be all right, Brian?
You see, we have these lights on us.
The white hot spotlight.
The white hot spotlight.
Yeah.
Hello.
I was worried about where Davy Ma was going with her talk. Because once she gets going, there's no stopping her.
You never know what I'm going to say.
Yeah. And you know, I've trained intensely to be a cult leader. But my failure is I can never get anybody to do what I say. But I'm working on it. So I'm an aspirational cult leader. Anyway, so this is a transcript from Baba. Baba traveled around the world three times from 1970. Actually, it was during the 70s. I had three trips to the West. The first one was only for a few weeks. And the second and third were for 2 years at each time. And every night he spoke to huge audiences and had massive intensives with more than 1,000 people, gave Shaktipat to all these people. So this is going back to New York, on the 16th of October, 1979, to an evening program that Baba gave, and I think it gives a flavor of what he was like. Baba says, Satgunat Maharaj Ki Jai. With great respect and love, I welcome you all with all my heart. Or as you know, what did he say? Baba says, Sabko Bari Sanmani Kesad, etc. A person hears this every day. So a person should learn this all the time too. It's not that you should only hear this every day, but you should practice what you hear. Before Nasruddin's wife went to the market, she told Nasruddin, "I have put milk on the stove, so you should watch it." So Baba's launching into a Sheikh Nasruddin story. Baba would pronounce it Nasruddin. And many of you have heard these Nasruddin stories, that Baba's comic relief. Nasruddin, or Mullah Nasruddin, is a very famous character in the far in the East. He's what you could call, he's called an archetypal figure. He's a wise fool. So he does things that have a lot of meaning, but he's really stupid. So here's Nasruddin's story. So Nasruddin's wife, Mrs. Nasruddin, Fatima her name is, said, "I put milk on the stove, so you should watch it." Nasruddin said, "Have no worry. Truly, I will watch it. Without any fears, go to the market and come back." She went to the market and came back. When she went back, she saw that the milk had boiled over, all over the fire, and it was all over. She began to scream. She said, I told you so many times, you should watch the milk. You never change. You're as you were before. You're the same Sheikh Nasruddin." He said, "Who told you that I didn't watch it? I'm telling you, I did watch it. Exactly at 10:15, the milk boiled over." So I keep saying, Baba says, that with great respect I welcome you all. The reason I say this is that so you can practice it. If you do the same thing that Sheikh Nasruddin did, it won't be of any use. Therefore, whatever I say, try to practice it. This is what the Gita teaches us. I'm talking about the Bhagavad Gita. The Gita is a great philosophical work. It is well known. The Gita is nothing but the instructions of the Lord. In the Gita, the Lord Krishna in the Gita, talks about everything you should do. It talks about karma, actions, devotion, knowledge, rituals, everything. The Lord said, this is Sri Krishna in the Gita, "He is a jnani, a man of knowledge who perceives me everywhere, who becomes aware that it is God who pervades the entire world, this vast world. This action of awareness is called jnana yagna, the fire ritual of knowledge." So jnana is wisdom. Doesn't mean just intelligence, it means wisdom, like knowing what's right and what you should do and so on, higher knowledge. And yagna means a fire ritual. That's the sort of the central ritual of Hinduism, where the Brahmins sit around a sacrificial fire and throw foodstuffs in and chant mantras. And so metaphorically, a yagna is a sacrifice. It means, in the Bhagavad Gita talks about many different kinds of yagnas. Like everything you do is can be considered a yagna. So the wisdom yagna, the fire ritual of knowledge, is what Baba's talking about. He says, "With this awareness, a man of knowledge worships me." So rather than Brahman sitting around a fire, you sit around and have the wisdom of oneness. That's your fire ritual of wisdom. Baba says, if you just go to church and offer some prayers, and if you come out and you just say whatever you feel like, you go to a temple and say Ram, when you come out of the temple you say Hiram, meaning I'm restless. So Ram, you say God in the temple, and you come out and say I'm restless. Or you go to a mosque and there you do namaz, and you say Allah. And then you come out of the mosque and you say, oh my God, I don't know anything. I don't know what to do. If you do that, it's of no use. A man of knowledge understands this and perceives everything in this way, and he worships God. He sees him alone in everything. They're saying it's not enough just to go to a church and so on. You have to actually imbibe the teaching. I remember Baba gave a talk at the end of a course. And he said, maybe it was the beginning of the course, I don't remember, but I remember the talk. He said, imbibe the knowledge. He was making a distinction, Gurdjieff says, between knowing and being, and which I call the difference between first and second education. There's head knowledge, knowledge of your understanding, and then there's actually taking that within and making it part of your being. It's very easy to say, oh, the principles of yoga are like this and like this. Easy to say you should welcome everyone, you should love everyone, but to actually do it is a whole different thing. And to live it and to experience it, you have to work on yourself, because there are many tendencies that come up within us that go in the opposite direction. Many voices that we hear inside of our heads that don't say, oh, I welcome and love you. They say, I hate you, go away, and, you know, and so on. So Baba's always saying, and this is what yoga is about. Yoga is about the actual experience of what the teaching is. And you have to do practice to truly imbibe it. So he says, he sees him alone in everything. Sometimes a person worships the Lord and he feels he's a servant and the Lord is his Lord. Although such a man of knowledge worships the Lord in that way, he has the awareness that the Lord exists in everything. He's saying even though he might worship in a dualistic way, a particular form of God, he knows that God actually is formless and dwells everywhere. While commenting on this, Yaneshwar Maharaj said, O Arjuna, the world is manifold. There are so many diversities. Still, such a being never sees the world from the viewpoint of duality. He sees the entire world as one. So Yaneshwar says that behind all the apparent separations and dualistic things, all the manifold manifestations, there's one spirit, one consciousness behind everything. He says, Baba says now, for example, the body. The body has so many limbs and so many senses. The body has eyes, nose, mouth, head, stomach, back, legs, and hands. Still, the body is one, though it has so many limbs. Although there are many branches in a tree, still the tree is one and the same. Although there are countless rays of the sun, the sun is one and the same. In the same way, that one has become a man as well as a woman. That one has become sentient objects and insentient objects. So it is that one which pervades everything and has become everything. With this action of awareness, jnana yagna, such a being worships me. This is what Yaneshwar's commentary on the Bhagavad Gita is. So with this knowledge, this is his ritual. This is a person of knowledge's ritual, is to see everything as one. That's his yagna, that's his practice. Baba says, every person is different. Every person has a different name. Every person is of a different size. Every person has a different temperament and a different tendency. Still, such a being does not perceive any difference in anybody. You have to see the oneness behind the differences. There's a richness in all the differences, and yet there's a oneness behind all of them. He sees only non-duality. With this awareness, this jnana yagna, he worships me, he contemplates me, he meditates on me. So he doesn't just spout it, but he looks at everything and sees the oneness. He looks for the oneness behind everything. He worships me with the awareness that I am one, although I am many. Do you think that's a valid thing, that although it appears as many, there's only one? Do you like that thought? So saying, take that thought, contemplate that, and take it deeper within so that it actually applies to life, the way you deal with other people, the way you work, deal with your work, with your family. He says, although the clothes are different, still if you take the cloth apart, the way it is woven is the same. In the same way, a person of knowledge understands that it is only me who exists in all things, me, God, whether they are sentient or insentient. Such a being's wrong knowledge and delusion just go away. Such a being's balloon of ego bursts. Then such a being does not say that this person is big and that person is small. Such a being becomes very humble before everybody because he realizes that I alone, God alone, exists in all of them. This is the worship of Jnana Yagna. For this reason I say, with respect and love, I welcome you all with all my heart. This is how I perform the worship. So this is Baba's Jnana Yagna, to welcome everyone with love. Now it's time to answer your questions. But today I received a very special letter and needs an urgent answer. Here it is. And the note here says, Malti opens the letter. Malti is now Guru Maharaj Swami Chidvilasananda. One of Baba's successors, who was his translator in those days. She was a young girl and translated very nicely. So she opens up the letter, and the letter goes like this. Dear Baba, please forgive me for asking this question. I know it's not question and answer day, but I want the answer urgently. We've been watching closely the news coverage of the Pope's visit to America, and we are greatly impressed by what he's doing. But there's one thing that is puzzling us. The Pope clearly mentioned in Philadelphia that women cannot be priests. This brought about great displeasure among the women present. Can you give us your opinion on this matter? We feel that an answer is very necessary. That's the quote. This is a dangerous question.
Yeah.
I'll skip that, okay? Baba says, it's all right that an answer is very necessary. However, it should be asked to the Pope, you know, not me. I did hear about this. Somebody read the clippings to me, and this appeared in 1 or 2 or 3 newspapers. And I also watched this on the news. The Pope made the statement, the Jagadguru made the statement, and how can I try to answer that statement? What can I say? So he says the Pope, Jagadguru, is the world guru. He considers the Pope as the world guru. He says he made the statement, what can I say about it? If he said that women cannot be priests, then the women will ask him that question. So that will also happen. So you should have some patience. However, when we hear such words or statements or anything like that, we should not feel disturbed. If we do feel disturbed, then that creates a lot of confusion in our life. It is the age of science, so you should use your scientific mind and try to understand both the forms, man and woman, from a scientific viewpoint. I do not see any difference between the forms. In India, there are 1,200 Shakti Pitas, seats of Shakti. These are places where the female principle, female divinity, the divine feminine is worshipped. They worship particular places like that. Just like the there's a wonderful temple a couple of miles from Ganeshpuri in the next town called Vajreshwari, which is a temple of goddess, and very powerful Shakti there. It says, these are the particular places of Shakti, and people worship the seat of Shakti with great respect. One of the Shakti Pitas is Madhura Meenakshi. In the temple, they have a statue of the Shakti, and they've given the female form to the statue because it's a Shakti statue. She has a nose ring and is a diamond. It is really radiant. The light goes to a long distance. It seems like a flashlight. It is very powerful and it is radiant. The men and women have the same place. God is neither a man or a woman. He is beyond this distinction of sex. Neither is he a man or a woman. God is consciousness. So God is beyond this distinction of sex. Consciousness, which is free from this, has become a man and a woman. So they're equal. Vedanta says that every object is made up of 25 principles or tattvas. Shaivism says there are 36 tattvas, principles. But both the philosophies are saying the same thing. And there are absolutely five, although they have 25 and 36 principles. They're almost saying the same thing. They both say, actually, that there's a oneness behind all the change. They have different perspective on it. Baba says, when you hear any kind of statement, if you become disturbed, then your happy life is confused. You're in confusion, you just cannot lead a happy life when you struggle with the statements. I can say this. Neither can a man nor a woman become a priest. Nonetheless, the person who wants to become a priest can become a priest. Very, very Zen-like, isn't this? A person who has an incredible amount of reverence towards God, a person who really wants to become a priest, can become a priest on his own. He does not need anybody's signature to say that, yes, he can become a priest. There were so many great beings among Sufis, and one of them was Rabia, who was also very great. Rabia was a great female Sufi. In Shaivism, too, there were so many women saints. In Marathi, there's a beautiful saying which goes like this, whoever can rule, the kingdom belongs to him. Only he can become a king. Therefore, if you want to become something, you can become that. Why do you need somebody else's opinion for your becoming something? You can become so independently in your own right. What's he saying there? He's saying you don't need a church to certify you. You don't need some organization. The inner meaning of becoming a priest is to know the self, is to know God. And if you really want to know God, it doesn't matter who you are or what organization gives you its imprimatur or not, you can become that. That's the essence of it. So that's what he's saying. He says God is equal for everybody. God does not make this difference between a man and a woman, nor does he make any difference between colors or classes because they all belong to him. Nor does he make any difference among countries because they all belong to him. Nor does he make any difference among sects because they all belong to him. One thing is certain, only he can reach God, the person who goes beyond all differences, who becomes free from all these forms, all these societies and everything else. I read a Sufi story. Once many people who called themselves to be great, or considered themselves to be great, I guess it means, went to meet God. They were at his door. One of them knocked on the door. Somebody asked, who is it? The person said, I am the Jagat Guru. I am a great Swami. The answer came, you should leave this place. We have no room here. The second one went and knocked on the door. A voice said, who is it? He said, I am Haji Muhammad. Haji Muhammad means the one who goes to Mecca all the time and comes and goes and comes and goes. So it's considered very great in Islam to visit Mecca. What is the point of coming and going, coming and going? You can also take birth and die, take birth and die. So you come and go, come and go. Anyway, he said, I am Haji Muhammad. He who goes to Mecca goes and comes, goes and comes. The voice said, what business do you have here? Keep going. Keep doing Haji. Keep going to Mecca. The third one went there and knocked on the door and said, I'm a big priest. The answer came, if you're a big priest, what makes your bigness? What does your bigness have to do here? You should just leave this place. The fourth one went and knocked on the door. Who is it? Me. What do you have here? Just leave this place. The fifth one went there. He also knocked on the door. Who is it? There was no answer. He knocked on the door again. Who is it? There was no answer. He knocked on the door the third time. Who is it? Still there was no answer. The door was flung open, and the voice said, just get in. If you become something, you can't get anywhere. There's a very famous story of Baba's where he's about with the phrase, don't become anything. This was the instruction. So if we become something, then we lose our formless identity. We lose connection with that self. If we identify with something lesser, we become limited. So don't become anything. So in an inner sense, there has to be a destruction of all identifications going on all the time, if you want to know that the self. This is what he's talking about. So if you become something, you can't get anywhere. If you don't become anything, and if you get rid of all your becoming something, then you'll get everywhere. What does that mean? Your positions, your pride, your identification with various things, let them all go. And underneath them is something much greater than any of them. He says, so stop becoming something. Just forget it. And this is the jnana yajna, isn't it? To continually get off things, get off positionality, get off your ego trip and all that. Continually let it dissolve in consciousness. So he says, just forget it. The women should not think they're inferior. Tomorrow's intensive is going to be on love. So tomorrow all of you will get the complete answer. In the love intensive, the women will get the answer whether they can become priests or not. It is Shakti who discovered God as well as the world, not the Shakta. So it's not the word, not the devotee of Shakti, but the energy itself. Once all of the sages got together and did a lot of tapasya, so they did a lot of practice. They performed many austerities to know the source of this world, God. Finally, the divine power, Shakti, revealed herself to them from within. She is called the divine power, the power of God, the power of the self. This Shakti, this divine power, is the cause of everything in this world, men as well as women, priests as well as gurus. Everything comes out of this Shakti. And that's why we're going to be celebrating Navaratri next week. In this world of problems and different circumstances, we should not try to distinguish this or that, who can become what or not what. We should try to discover that peace, love, courage, and the awareness of oneness of becoming one. So Baba says, have your focus not on the differences, not on that which is going to get you upset and outraged and haunted, but focus on that which will uplift you, that which will fill you with spirit, that will fill you with love, that will fill you with Shakti. Bible says, neither can this body be made up of just a man or just a woman. In the sexual fluid, there are two principles, virya and raja. Virya is the male principle and raja is the female principle. When they come together, this body is formed. Virya is the man's sexual fluid and raja is the woman's sexual fluid. There's half woman in a man and half man in a woman. Therefore, the Lord performed the dance, and he was half man and half woman. So you see the Nataraj here, and there's an image of Shiva where he's half male and half female, and he's dancing the universe into existence. Only today somebody gave this to me, and Baba had a little Nataraj. That's that little one. Do we have a little one around? Anyway, it doesn't matter. So he held it up. So only somebody gave me this Nataraj. Nataraj means the Lord of the dance. So it's much easier for me to explain this to you. There's part of a woman in a man and part of a man in a woman. These are just arguments. One can become something and the other one cannot become something. This does not show the knowledge of the truth. In this world today, we need supreme peace. Today, we need awareness of universal brotherhood. Today, we need this sense of family. We do not need any false reasonings and arguments. In 2 days, I'll answer the same thing, because the intensive is going to be on love. Let us give up all these arguments and statements and just chant God's name with respect. If we chant God's name, then we will experience peace from within. All names belong to him and come from him. Therefore, have no doubt about the different names of God. For example, right now, a while ago, You had a doubt about this man and a woman, so don't doubt the names of God. They all belong to him. Once again, with great respect, I welcome you all with all my heart. Satguru Nath Maharaj Ki Jai. So there's only that one question that Barbara answered in his inimitable way. So it's wonderful tonight to for those of us who knew him to remember him, and those of us who didn't know him to remember him. Because I feel when we listen to there's an enchantment, and that enchantment is Baba. Another way we can be with him is we're going to chant with him. There's a chant that was taped many years ago of Om Namah Shivaya, and the way we'll do it, for 10 minutes, we'll chant opposite Baba. Whenever Baba's chanting, just listen to Baba, and we'll all chant together with the call group. You got that? Slow Om Namah Shivaya. And Girish has prepared a slideshow which we can look at too. And we'll chant for 10 minutes, and after that we'll meditate for 10 minutes. And so it's 36 years, so I'm almost getting over it. But each year, on an inner plane, Baba grows and grows, and his love becomes greater, his wisdom becomes greater, and his shakti becomes greater. So I salute that every day, and I salute that every moment, and I salute that particularly on this holy occasion. So let's chant together. And I salute the great Baba Muktananda, the great bearer of shakti, and the great heart. So let's chant. Satguru Nath Maharaj Ki Jai.